listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we've got a show called Advice for New Devs. We're going to go through both. Scott and I have our own opinions and advice for someone who's trying to get into the game or someone that's trying to level up. And also, we asked, we put the bat signal out on Twitter and asked, like, what is your advice? So we've got all kinds of stuff here, and Scott and I will sort of read through them and give our thoughts as to if we think it's a good advice or not.
Yeah.
We are sponsored today by three awesome companies. First one is Sanity Structured Content CMS. Second one is Sentry Performance and Error Tracking, and third one is Cloudinary Image Hosting and Transformation on the Fly. We'll talk about all them partway through the episode. How are you doing today, Scott?
Doing good. Just, you know, keeping it up. We're going on our first vacation since the pandemic, so ready for that next week.
And wow.
Yeah, Grandma and Grandpa are coming to watch the kids for a little bit, and that's going to be our first time away, where we're both away from the kids for any amount of time, really. So, scary, definitely scary, but same time, it's going to be exciting and, you know, wonderful, hopefully.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. That's really exciting. Caitlin and I are going to hopefully get away for one night with somebody watching our kids once we do our anniversary in the summer. So we're stoked for that.
Well, that's nice. Yeah. That'd be nice. Just to get away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get on into it. You want to grab the first little tidbit of advice? Again, this is advice from Scott and I, and then later in the show, we'll get into some of the community sent in suggestions.
Yeah. So the first one we have here is to get comfortable with your code not working. We spend a lot of time writing code, and many of the time it's under construction. It's got little guys hitting it with a hammer and a jackhammer or whatever. Either way, this code is under construction most of the time. And when it's under construction, it's not going to be working. And we'll hit bugs, you'll hit issues, things will not work for periods of time, but you'll get through it. It's really just how it is. We go back and forth between the code working and the code not working. And so you're going to have to spend just as much time with the code not working if you're editing and tweaking and learning new things, especially in the beginning.
Next one we have here is compound learning and momentum is your biggest tool. I have this quote on my JavaScript 30 course, which is there's no formation without repetition. And I think that is honestly the biggest tool for someone who is learning to code. I am not the smartest dev out there, but I feel like I have been pretty persistent over the years of continuing my learning. And now I look back at the like 15 years that I've been a dev, and I say, oh, wow, like I actually know a thing or two. And there was no like massive leap or bound. It was just that like every single day I get a little bit better. And then you look back in years and you're way, way ahead. So there's going to be a lot of lows where you think you're not making any progress and everything is frustrating and you're not even sure if you like development. There's going to be a lot of highs where you're getting into some new tech and you're super excited about it. And you take those highs and lows as well, but just know that you're in this for the long game here, and having that momentum is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is one of those things where you don't even notice it until you look back. The most common way that you hear this being expressed from developers is they'll say things like, oh, I looked at code I wrote a year ago, and what was I thinking?
Yeah.
And that's like such a common thing that you hear, because that's just evidence that you are putting in that little time by time by time and just growing constantly. Next one is going to be this is actually a huge one. In fact, this is one of those skills that took me from a developer who was just getting into my first job to a comfortable developer who could solve my own problems without asking for help. And this is learning to read the error messages. The error messages, when things don't work, are really, 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 really helpful. Let me tell you, that is the way you solve just about any issue. And when you're just getting started, you might not realize how to read them. And that's a skill in itself, but you also might not realize where to look. I remember one time when I was maybe like just, I didn't know what I was doing with PHP at all or a database. It was my first time working with a database. I was trying to get Magento working on some site with a cPanel. And I broke a file because I didn't know what I was doing in PHP, and the whole thing white screened. And all I would have had to do is look in the error log to figure out where the problem was. But instead, I was just like, well, I'm going to FTP. I'm going to grab all the local files and just start over. And that's what I did because I didn't know any better. Because I was like, well, I guess I goofed something up. I don't even know.
It's a white screen. That's it.
That's it. Toast.
Can't be fixed.
Yeah. And there's always an error log. And that error log always gives you a roadmap to fix the problem, no matter what it is.
Yeah. I would say not always. Usually, well, yeah. Sometimes it's pointing at something bizarre. But I've found that if you ask yourself questions, is this error coming from my code? If so, then I goofed something up. Is it coming from a library? If it's coming from a library, I initially would be like, well, the library is broken. But and more often than not, it's that you're not supplying the library with what is it was expecting. And sometimes the libraries will check for that. Other times they won't. Is this coming from the browser? I've had many issues where the error in the console was just totally unrelated to the thing that I was having trouble with. And there wasn't actually any error happening. And sometimes Chrome extensions can throw errors, or there's weird network errors. Or a big one I see is people are running Privacy Badger or the DuckDuckGo extension, and that's blocking something. And just think about, sort of take a step back and think about those types of things and learn to read a stack trace. As a stack trace will tell you what function called what function called what function called what function, and then it broke. So you can sort of step back, and more often than not, it's just dumped into your console or into your terminal, and you're like, this is just a gobbledygook to me. But if you can learn to parse through it and throw out the pieces that are unnecessary, you can usually find a little bit of tidbit of information in there.
Yeah, totally. And it is. It's always, like you said, you have it's a treasure map. It really is. It often just leads you to where the issue could be. And you're right. You know, it's so funny. I'm on some programming Reddits just casually. Sometimes I pop in to help solve problems. And you wouldn't believe how many just times the question is, I'm getting this bug. Can somebody help me fix it? And the bug is like, cannot read property of undefined. You know, cannot read property ID of undefined. Yeah. And the answers are just, well, why is this property undefined? I'm like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. I mean, if that property is undefined and you're trying to access a property of it, then, you know, it's going to throw an error. So figure out why your object is coming in as undefined and then go from there. You know, it is funny because your default can just be to, well, I got to ask for help. I don't know what to do for this. But the more and more you read it and just push on it, I think you can really make some progress.
Yeah, I was talking to my wife the other day. Something wasn't working. I think I've told this story. Did I tell the story about the lamp?
I don't know. I don't remember lamp story.
Oh, I'll tell it anyways. Anyways, we have a lamp that has a switch on it. And that lamp was plugged into a dimmer. And then that was plugged into a Wi-Fi switch, which was plugged into the wall. And she just comes to me and says, the lamp's broken. And I was like, okay, well, like, what part? Like, why is it not working? And she's like, I don't know. It's just not working. Like, the lamp as a whole is broken. And partially that was just because she just wanted me to fix it and didn't want to deal with it. But I was just like, figure out at what point in the chain is the bulb, is the switch, is the dimmer, is the Wi-Fi switch, or the power coming out of the wall? Is it isolated to one of those parts? And that will give you a much better idea of where it's at. And that sort of like debugging mindset is something that you can really, once you have that sort of mindset, that applies like literally everywhere in life, but you can just dig into things and say, okay, I understand the issue is coming from here. Now I have a little bit more clarity as to what could possibly be causing it.
Yeah. And sometimes in some situations, like a lamp being broken, you just want the lamp fixed, right? Hey, lamp's broken. Fix the lamp, please. And then other times, when it's your career, like a programming, if you go to some other developer on IRC or on Reddit or whatever, Slack, and you say, the lamp's broken, how do I fix it? Like, that's not helping you, right? That's not helping you grow as a developer. So if you're thinking about this for long-term gains and growth, then you definitely like learning these debugging skills to help yourself solve these problems is an essential part of growing as a developer.
Next one we have here is, take time to learn the concepts that scare you. There are lots of things in programming that seem a lot scarier than they are. Hoisting, memoization, caching. There's a lot of these things where you're like, oh my gosh, I would never. High order functions. These are all like scary words. And then you look up, like you look, try to read a quick blog post that said like, what is that? And then you're like, I don't understand what that is. But once you sort of get into it and realize what they are, you go, oh, that's not that complicated. That was being explained improperly, or it was just not the way that I liked it. So take the time to dig into those specific things. At least learn the high level of what they are, because as soon as you hit an issue that thing will solve, then it will make very clear.
Totally. Next one is, we all struggle. There are points where, you know, I mentioned earlier when your code's not working, but there are points where you really feel like, I am too dumb to do this. I just cannot do this because, you know, you'll just spend hours on something and none of the solutions you've tried to fit worked it. You know, nothing that you can do is getting you through this error, this bug, this situation. You cannot understand this one small concept that everybody else can understand. You've tried to learn Redux for the 8th time and you don't understand why you need all this stuff. These are the types of things that everybody goes through all of the time. And as you're learning, the good indication that you're learning something is that you're hitting into things that seem like they're too hard for you and that you're struggling a little bit. If it's all easy all of the time, you're never going to get there. So we all struggle. This stuff is hard. Give yourself a break in that regard. Just know that every single developer out there who's gotten to any point has just put in the time to get past it. Now, granted, there are some naturally gifted people, but those people are few and far between. The majority of the industry has worked hard to get where they are.
Totally. Yeah, there's, you'll often see some of these YouTubers, or you'll see a 14-year-old on Twitter who is just slaying it and things like that. And that is not the norm. Most of us are just regular people where this stuff is hard for us, but we sort of kept at it and it gets a lot easier. I always tell people, like, you should be like pushing yourself like 6% more or 12% more than you think you should, because the struggle bus is where a lot of that learning will happen. And if you keep pushing yourself a little bit further, very similar to working out or other things like that, you always need to be pushing yourself just a little bit further than you think you should be, because that's where the learning happens.
Yeah. And working out is the perfect analogous, because like, if you think about it, you know, people wonder how people get to be in shape or, you know, really strong or any of that stuff, when in reality, all they're doing is showing up to the gym 4 days a week and putting in an hour. And, you know, that is really the key to any sort of progress at all, is to just push through the hard stuff, right? This next one is one of my favorite ones because it is so hard to do in practice, but in reality, it is so extremely helpful. It's so very good. And this one is that taking a walk is good for solving bugs. You know, I used to work at an agency and my boss and I used to just go for a walk around the block all the time. Be like, hey, man, I'm having a hard time with this bug. You want to go for a walk? The point of the walk was not to talk about the bug and was not to like ruminate on it or work on the code itself. The point of the walk was to get your head out of the code and get your head out of the current mindset that you're in, and then get your brain just a little bit of time to relax. And when you do that, you come back to your code, you feel very different. And most of the time, you end up looking at it a totally different way or having another type of solution. This also works for like going to bed for the night, you know, and then finding the solution when you wake up. It's a very common thing. This is one of the hardest things to do. It's like 11 o'clock. It's not working. It's 11:30. It's not working. And you're saying, I just going to fix this before I go to bed. It's 12. It's not working. Just go to bed. You're going to solve it like first thing in the morning if you do, or just go for a walk. If it's the afternoon, it will help you every time.
Yeah, that is a bit of a bummer one, because sometimes you just want to sit there and push through and fix this darn bug. But often I'll just walk away from it, have a shower, go for a walk, whatever. And then, aha, or you come back to it and be like, oh, that was simple. How was I totally missing that? Next one is get comfortable with the command line. It's weird that most of our tools as web developers are still on the command line. Yeah. And not like a wicked GUI tool with drag and drop. And I remember, what was I learning? I forget what I was learning early on. And I was just like, oh, like that's it. Like there's no app that I can like click settings things like that, where So that's just the reality of the tools that we use. They're so flexible that building some sort of interface for the type of things would be too complicated and not give you the full control over it. So getting good at like, and not like being amazing at like bash scripting, because honestly, writing bash scripts is not a good skill as a web developer. Or not necessarily a bad skill, but it's not something that you need. You can write JavaScripts You can write many JavaScripts if you want to script something, but being able to traverse a directory, to create files, to move stuff, to SSH into a box and just be comfortable with those commands as to what you're doing, and you're not just pasting in random stuff that someone on Stack Overflow posted 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's a huge one. That's like a big tool as a web developer that is not code related.
Yeah, I think just even being able to, I think like the top 10 skills for, well, I don't know about 10, but the top skills for command line is just being able to navigate, move files, copy files, delete files, SSH.
Yeah.
Like those types of things. You don't have to be like a command line master, but you do need to know how to get around, run git commands, those types of things. It's not as hard as you're expecting it. Most of the time it's just memorizing what to do. But also if you know what CD is, change directory, then you're never going to forget that it's CD, right? So just understanding what all the commands, the words are behind them and what they are will definitely get you at least into that zone. Now, let's actually take a break to talk about one of our sponsors today, which is Sanity. Wes, do you want to talk about Sanity?
I would love to. Sanity is a content platform that powers better digital experiences. So what does that mean? Essentially what it is, they do all kinds of stuff, but essentially what they do is they are a CMS that is extremely flexible and extremely powerful. I'm going to talk about Sanity Studio, which is the actual UI that you use to interface with Sanity. Sanity is a hosted solution, but the Sanity Studio is actually code that you can run on your computer and you have full control over that code, which is really, really cool. It's like the best, sort of the best balance of they handle all the hard stuff, which is the database and the hosting of it and the scaling of it. And then you still have full control over the UI. So Sanity Studio is a React app that is fully featured, but if you want to be able to control it, to skin it, to be able to create your own components for custom inputs, you have full control over it. And you can also host that Sanity Studio wherever it is you want. So you have a next website or a next app that you want to power with Sanity, go to sanity.io/syntax. That will get you double the free usage tier, which is 200,000 API requests, 1 million API CDN requests, 10 gigs of asset storage, and 20 gigs of bandwidth. Plenty, plenty, plenty. Thank you, Sanity, for sponsoring.
$1 million.
$1 million.
All right. So this next one is going to be important if you're working on with a lot of designs, which I know a lot of us are, especially if you're in the agency world where you're getting a new design, you know, all the time. This is such an extremely valuable skill. It's being able to replicate a design pixel perfect, as in the designer gives you something and you give it back to them as a fluid working website with the spacing and everything working exactly how it should be. You would not believe how many interns or junior devs that I've worked with in agency worlds that they get a design and they bring it back and they say, it's done. And you look at it, you say, it's done? What do you mean it's done? This is not done. This doesn't look at all like the design. Like what's up with this gray color? It is very clearly not the same hex value that's in the document. You use like two pixels for the lines here when they only have one in the design. You have this spacing is weird. The spacing is off. These icons are wrong. Like you name it. People will do it and then they'll try to say it's done. This always takes more time. I always got my stuff done really early because I could just recreate the design really quickly, right? So if you recreate the design as a website, it's going to be way less time on your part because, you know, if you think, oh, I got to do all these little details or whatever, those details are going to save you so much time because you're not going to have to go back to it after the designer comes and says, you didn't do this, isn't right. It's so funny to me because it was always a skill that I don't think I thought about too much. It was just something that I expected out of my work, right?
Yeah.
But I think some people, they don't think about it as in like, this needs to be the way the designer is asking for it. Do it that way. And, you know, go from there if things need to be changed. But do it pixel perfect. Just absolutely do it. Spend the time. Make it nice.
Yeah, like that's such a good thing, because we always talk about like JavaScript skills and knowing libraries and things like that. And those things are very helpful. But being able to cut a design into a fully functioning website that looks exactly like it and is well coded is like a big, big, big part of our job. So go and grab a design from, you can go online, you can find pre-built designs and just cut that thing to HTML, CSS, and JavaScript and make it work and make it be pixel perfect. That will really, I keep saying level up. So you have to pay me here, Scott. You know, that will really level up your skills.
Cha-ching. Wait, no, you have to use me. That's my trade. That's, I guess I don't have a trademark on that, but...
Isn't that Mario?
Yeah,
has a trademark on that.
No, Mario doesn't level up. Ugh.
Who levels up?
I think it's a concept from RPGs. I think it comes directly from JRPGs, like the initial Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest or something. But I honestly don't know who the first to level up was. That's a whole nother conversation, I suppose.
I always thought that was Mario when he gets the mushroom and he goes bloop 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 bloop.
No,
no. Oh, man, my world is rocked.
Yep, just rocked it.
Next one you have here. This is one Scott added. I very agree with this. You are on a team. Don't get stuck in the us versus them mentality of internal company teams. I would even extend this for working with a client in an agency or a freelance, because there's often people are frustrated with the other devs, the other designers, the client, and they're just like, you even hear like people give out advice as to like, how do you deal with this client? And they're always like, well, put your foot down and do this. And it's like, wow, that seems very aggressive, a very aggressive way to deal with another designer, another dev, or a client. Like, you're on a team, you're working with them to solve their problems. I think you should do better than that.
Yeah. To speak on like the team aspect side of things, because I've been on dev teams where like you get into like a dev team meeting and it's all like, you see this dumb design I got? Or like this designer doesn't know what they're doing, or so-and-so manager. And sure, that's part of just like company interpersonal relationships where there are not always, everything isn't always amazing and whatever. But you are on a team with these people and you are working to get these things to be the best there are. So if you're working with a subpar design or whatever, it's not doing you any good to rip on it, to feel worse about it, to hate on it in any sort of way. But it's also not good to build up some sort of a us versus them type of deal where, you know, that everybody's against each other. Like, yeah, you are one big team. And I know that's like such a thing where developers, they can get like kind of pompous about being able to create stuff. Even new developers, like, yeah, I made this website and this dumb designer couldn't do it. Like, they couldn't write this code. Yeah, well, you couldn't do their design. You know, they're different skills, they're different jobs. And I think it's important to keep all of that in mind, that everybody's working together on something. You are all a team. These are all your people. Like, you should all be lifting each other up.
That's something I see a lot with new devs, where they think that dumping on a technology or a library or a CMS or another person's implementation, they think that that makes them look like they're good. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, we would see this all the time in the boot camp. People would spend, they'd be 4 weeks into being a web developer and be like, I hate WordPress. It's awful. Like, what a bad way to template out things. And they're like, okay, you don't know that much yet. Like, calm down. But by being opinionated about something doesn't make me think that you're good at what you're doing. It just makes me think that you're a bit of a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Next one is going to be, you are not an expert, especially as a new person. And this goes right along with what you were just saying. If you're new or even intermediate or even advanced, I would say to any state within this game of being a dev, you are not an expert. You won't be an expert. And even if you are an expert, you're probably at the very, very top of the field. Let's just say that you're working in some agency or some whatever. You're not an expert. You might know things. You might know a lot of things, but there's always other things. You know, it's too often that some developers get into a flow where they say, like you said, they'll dump on a technology because they don't like it. There's endless posts on any of the social media, Reddits, whatever, where people are like, well, you might not like us older developers, but, you know, we know that you don't jump on the latest hype train or whatever. And they're like, okay, we get it. You can write HTML and CSS, but there are very valid reasons why many companies are using certain specific technologies.
Yeah.
Those technologies exist and they have users, they have validity. So like, give them that validity. And maybe instead of just putting your feet in the sand and saying, I'm not doing this. I mean, this was very common, especially when SaaS came out and developers were like, I like writing CSS the real way with CSS. And it's like, well, I like not writing out vendor prefixes and I like not duplicating my class names with nesting and I like variables, you know? And I think those concepts and those things often get lost because people put their feet and they just plant them and they say, I don't need this thing. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. You're always going to be learning. You're a student forever. And if you have the student forever mentality, you'll keep your brain a little bit open. It's so easy to fall into the trap of like, you know, every single developer who uses Vue must be dumb. No, they're very productive and they're probably just looking at it a different way than you are with whatever tool you're using. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Next one we have here is scaffold out with comments. Or I like to call this pseudo coding. So sometimes you'll say like, okay, I hear this from a lot of people. I know what I need to do, but I don't even know where to possibly start. And to that, I say like, you start writing pseudo code. So don't write the code, write like, okay, I need to get an array of names. I need to filter them for names that start with W. And then for each name, I need to loop over it and send off a fetch request. And then once all of them are back, I need to loop over the results, render them to HTML, and then stick them into the DOM. And if you can write those all into comments with like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 up beside each of them, then it's like, okay, well, I can, instead of like, oh, this thing is overwhelming, I can focus on just the one piece of the pie that I'm trying to do right now.
Paint by numbers. I even do this for HTML. If there's like a grouping of like a header or something, I'll just have a comment and say header. And then that way I like have a spot for it whenever I come back to it. Whenever I want to work on the header, it has a spot.
Yeah.
I think scaffolding with comments is just a great way to organize your stuff and to get your stuff as an outline. It's the same thing as like writing an outline before you write a paper. It just helps. It helps every time. Your code ends up becoming more organized and probably less refactors along the way. But if you do refactor, Wes, you're probably going to hit some bugs. And some new bugs, maybe, if you're using TypeScript, maybe not, who knows. But with any of this stuff, you'll probably need an error and exception handling tool like Sentry. If you want to head over to Sentry.io, use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word. You will get 2 months for free of Sentry's amazing error and exception handling tools. Not only that, but you get performance tracking tools. You get just so many new things every single month. I swear, every single time I log on to Sentry, there's like some new little widget or new tool that gives me access to some bit of data that I didn't have before, whether it is getting a better idea of what the error picture on our site really looks like, or getting a better picture of what that performance pie looks like on our site as well. So head on over to Sentry at Sentry.io, coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, and you will get 2 months for free. Thank you so much for Sentry for sponsoring.
All right, let's get into our Twitter advice. So I sent out a tweet that says, what is your advice for new developers? Scott Talinsky and I are doing a syntax podcast on the topic and want to hear your different opinions. Please include your background in the reply. And at the time of recording, this has 63 replies, so we're not going to be able to get through them all. I would recommend that you take a little peruse through the replies because there's lots and lots of good nuggets in there, especially from devs. That's the one thing, nice thing about Twitter is that there's devs from all different backgrounds and experiences. And some people have been devs for 2 months and some of them have been 25 years. So it's kind of cool to see the different advice from people who have different amounts of experience, because also like someone who just came out of a boot camp, a 25-year-old dev is not going to have advice for somebody that came out of a boot camp. Well, they might, but it's some really good advice if somebody has just gone through it themselves, maybe a year before you.
Word. Ben Newton says, soft skills are as important as coding skills if you want to go far. Ben is dead on here, because let me tell you, I've been at companies where I was one of the people who they, one of the devs they allowed into meetings. And now it's not, that's like a real thing because the other devs were just rude to clients. They didn't have the understanding of how to talk about their projects in a way that people would understand because they wanted to get too much into the code stuff, too much into the specifics, not enough about the goals and what the big results are. So soft skills, yeah. How to work with clients, how to work with your fellow developers, how to work with a design team or any of that stuff. They will take you very far because when people like you, you get promoted. That turns out to be a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with this one as well. One of the later pieces of advice is always be interviewing. Even if you're not necessarily looking for a job, those skills of going through an interview and talking to people and going back and forth and talking about yourself are key. I find myself doing this a lot. Is sometimes I'll go into like a business and, you know, sometimes when you meet somebody who just loves to chit chat or talk about their whatever project you're doing, whether it's like you're going into Home Depot or whatever, and the person just wants to talk your ear off. I find myself being like, yeah, trying to get out of there as soon as possible because I'm like, I don't feel like talking to you. But I always like push myself a little bit to be like, all right, let's just like build up my like communication skills and try to ask three or four questions about what it is that they're talking about. And I find that that has helped build up my soft skills, even at conferences as well. You're chit-chatting with somebody, try to asking lots of questions, try to pull information out of them. Because that builds up your conversational skills.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a friend who, it can border a little bit on like turning it into an interview sometimes. So it's like not always great, but he asks really great questions sometimes. And sometimes it's too much, right? It's like sometimes it'll be like, Even just very simple questions. You know, let's say we're talking about cars. I say, I like this car. What do you like about it? Okay, I like this and this and this. Huh. Okay. That's pretty cool. But even like that same question, what do you like about it? It's a good question that people just don't ask, believe it or not. Like, oh, I really like this podcast. Oh, tell me, what do you like about it? What's your favorite thing about this podcast? And again, if you say, give me five things that you like most about this podcast, I mean, that's a little bit different. But, you know, if you're asking those kind of questions that actually show you care to a deeper degree than just like, oh, cool, that sounds like a fun podcast or something, you know, it's engaging a little bit more.
Yeah. Galen and I have a friend that is like that. And every time we go home from talking to that friend, we're like, oh, we like that guy. He asks such good questions. Yeah. He's always interested in what you're doing, you know? And instead of just trying to talk about yourself and blah, 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 or have these really like shallow conversations, he just like knows what to ask. You're like, damn, you're a good conversationalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a skill.
Next piece of advice is from Eric McCormick, Ed Moose on Twitter. Learn, observe, try. Don't be afraid to blog or speak to push yourself beyond your comfort zone. Something we talked about earlier is push yourself. It's okay to hack on stuff in your free time and it's okay not to. I think that's a good one. We heard that from a bunch of people is that sometimes you're going to be super stoked about all you want to code every minute of all of your life. You want to build things. The ideas are flying, and other times you just don't want to see a computer after work and all you want to do is go home and work on your pizza dough or whatever it is that you're working on. And knowing that that is okay. I always was thinking, we had another one from Jason Liggy. He says, you don't have to code for fun. Many people don't. Some do and some love it. Doesn't mean you're a bad dev. If you don't feel like it, you need to improve your skills by studying and learning, sure. But if you don't like doing it, don't worry about it. And I thought about replying as my plumber friend who likes to plumb for fun will disagree. Because it's one of the few jobs where people like expect you to go home and do the same thing. And that is not just that. For some people, this is just a job. And they are good at their job, but they're not doing it for fun on the side. I have a buddy who's a plumber, and he doesn't plumb for fun on the side, but he's constantly curious. He's always solving problems. He's always learning new things, trying out lots of like just random stuff in life. Like he's grafting fruit trees right now. And I'm like, that's really cool. And I think like he just has lots of good life skills, which is problem solving, being curious, and that will make you a better dev in the long run, I believe, even if it's not necessarily just code related.
Yeah. And we should say, though, I think when you're starting out and if you need to like really cram for some stuff, like, I mean, in college,
yeah,
you would cram all night and work, you know, study. I think that there's a difference between that and coding for fun. I used to code a lot for fun, and it was legitimately for fun, but it was only ever on projects that I was going to use for something, like creating tools for myself. And I feel like that's different because that's not working necessarily. I'm not creating something that's expected to make money or expected to be used by someone else. I'm making something, you know, just for myself. It's a, you know, just a, an expression in that way. And I think that can be maybe the better approach to coding for fun, so to say, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Next one is from Andrew Nickerson. He says, start by building a project that's interesting to you. Don't worry about understanding all of the tools and methods off the bat. Just make something that works. Depth of understanding can come after the joy of creation. And Andrew's dead on there. In fact, that's kind of exactly what I was just talking about for fun. It can be really fun if you just really take on something that is interesting to you and not just something that has goals that are monetary or something like that, right? If you're creating something just for yourself, just as something you're interested in, and it can really, really help you push forward into things. You know, I think the large part of my understanding of JavaScript and JavaScript frameworks overall has come from projects like this, where I'm just, oh, I wonder if I can do this thing. And one of the things I was like, I wonder if I could build a tool that randomly tells me a breakdancing move to do every 30 seconds or every 5 seconds or something. So that way I could be dancing and then have it shout out moves to me. And then you start to get into text-to-speech APIs and, you know, you build the thing and then it's fun. I mean, that's awesome. And then you've learned a whole bunch of new APIs. You learned a whole bunch of new skills and you got something out of it.
I totally agree. Is you can do what's called just-in-time learning. Is when you need to learn something, when you need something, like the drag and drop API is probably a good example. I'd say most developers have not implemented the drag and drop API because they haven't had to. But if you need to, then you can just go ahead and learn it at that time. You don't need to learn the drag and drop API and just sit there ready to get the next project because you might not ever have a project with that. But if you need that type of thing, then you go ahead and learn it just in time. Next one is from Michael Powers on Twitter. Ask questions, break things once in a while. I do that a lot more often than I'd like. Learn vanilla everything, even if it feels like a waste of time. I think about writing that function from scratch rather than importing a package. Think about importing a package rather than writing it from scratch. That's a good question. And finish it off, complete JavaScript 30. I like that. Just learn vanilla, even if it feels like a waste of time. We see that from a lot of people right now. They just want to get into whatever's going to get them a job. But Scott and I have been around long enough that we've seen a couple different frameworks come and go and libraries come and go. And we know that just knowing vanilla JavaScript is going to be your core asset. And you'll be able to pick up whatever framework or library. Like you've been listening to this podcast. Scott just completely rewrote his entire platform in a different framework. Why? Because he's good at JavaScript and he was able to just pick it up really quickly and start to implement the type of thing. The whole idea of components and styles and scoping and event listeners, they apply through any framework.
Yeah, those types of things they do. And if the browser APIs aren't going anywhere, so it's not like you're going to be investing your time in learning something that might not be here next year, you know, so,
yeah,
you know, imagine if you would have spent a ton of time learning Backbone JS. I mean, I guess those skills were definitely transferable to React, but they were, you know, specific skills. So you could always invest that time in the main stuff. And I'm not saying that to dunk on Backbone.js or anything. I'm just saying that it's not that widely used anymore. And nowadays that people, if you would have spent that time learning the foundations, well, maybe you would be able to take a little bit more with you. And not that Backbone was that intensive. Maybe Backbone was a bad example. Either way, you could replace the word Backbone with anything here. And a point still stands.
Yeah, literally any framework library, as long as you have your good fundamentals, like definitely go ahead and learn that framework as well, because that's what you want to use and that's what's going to get you the job. But don't neglect your vanilla JavaScript or your fundamentals in whatever language is you're learning, because that's gonna come with you wherever you go.
Yeah. Next one is from Jason Lee. He says, dev for about 15 years. It doesn't matter how long you do this job. Most of the stuff out there will probably be unknown and confusing. There is just too much. Don't worry about it. Just learn what you need to learn to do to what you want to do for what you want to do. So, I mean, Jason's also, he's right on. I mean, there is too much stuff, and that can be seen as a big plus for some people who like to learn a lot of things. And that could seem like a big scary thing for people who like really structured, like learn this, then learn this, then learn this, then learn this. This is not like that. This is a spider web of many different, many different things. And it's impossible to know the entire spider web.
Next one we have here is from Shwasta. Don't be afraid of the documentation and reading other people's code. I've been coding since 10 years, started with PHP, learned CSS, HTML, JS, and now totally into TypeScript and typed PHP. That'd be a kind of an interesting show, typed PHP. I agree with this one. Learning to read documentation and go through it all is super key. And like, I'm not just like saying like, oh, like search it and find it, but like literally take a couple hours to just parse the documentation so that you know what is in it and like sort of the what are the surface area of it is, and that you'll be able to understand the library and jump into the parts that you need much quicker. One other thing I'll say here is that when I was a new dev, reading other people's code made me more confused and more anxious. I would often like just like sit down and like start reading someone's code. I'm like, I have no clue what this is doing, especially if it was like very manicured, like done by a really, really good dev. Sometimes that stuff was just way too abstract for me and things were in too many places to understand what was going on. So if you are very new to dev, if you feel like reading other people's code is getting you nowhere, maybe take a break on that for a couple months and then come back to it and say, now I understand what that's doing.
Yeah, I didn't get good at reading other people's code until somewhat recently. I always thought it was like kind of difficult to do because of unknown styles and whatever. And it isn't until you know what to look for that like you need to know where to look and how to look at it to be able to read it. So, you know, reading it straight up, just somebody saying, hey, read the source isn't always going to be, you know, the best way, I think. All right, next one is from Max Stoiber. Max says, know your trade-offs. Every single choice you make has its upsides, but also its downsides. If you're not sure of the downsides, it's almost always because you don't know about them, not because they don't exist. Figure them out. And this is a very interesting point. And this one might be a little bit better for the intermediates, I think, because when you're first starting, I don't know if you have the brain capacity to really put into context upsides and downsides as much. But once you kind of know the lay of the land and getting past like the learning of the syntax of humps and stuff like that, it is important to know like, okay, you know, CSS frameworks. Yes, they have upsides and they have downsides. Why do some people use them and why do some other people not use them? And that's a good word to start with. So looking at something like that and saying, all right, what are the upsides and what are the downsides? And are the downsides big enough downsides for me to not implement something like this? Or are they important to me? Are they things that I will maybe eventually appreciate or not appreciate right now? But there is, like he says, upsides and downsides to everything.
Yeah, I think that this one is really good advice, but maybe more like intermediate dev advice. Because like if someone's like, you're 6 months into being a dev and you're like, all right, I'm going to choose a database. Let's talk about the upsides and downsides of a relational DB versus a non-relational DB. Like, you don't know.
Yep.
Like, you're not going to learn that stuff until you've actually done it and felt the pain. So I thought this was a really, really good advice, but maybe not for absolute beginners.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Next one we have here is from Pat Clark. Build a report with PMs and clients beyond technical. Learn their business language and they'll learn yours. Technical stuff becomes even easier with good relationships. Front-end dev, CMS dev for 13 years. That's really important. So CMS dev, probably working with all kinds of different businesses to make those businesses money. And he probably has gone into tons of different industries and talked to different types of people. And he's trying to solve a business problem and they're trying to solve a technical problem. So if you're on the same page and you can understand what happens, you're going to build something much better. I thought that was good advice.
Totally. All right. Another one is from Musa
Barghazi.
I wanted to throw an extra A in there. Barghazi. Musa Barghazi. He says that leave things better than you found them. And this is such a good one. It is such a good one because Yes. You know, a lot of times we hit files and they're crap. And you say, oh, this is crap. I got to work it. And it can be really, really easy to work in a crap file and leave it a crap file or not improve it in some sort of way. And sure enough, that is a time to do that. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to continue the crap just because there was already crap there. You want to at least improve it in some way or move it in the correct direction by at least your contribution to this thing is not making it any worse. So leave things better than you found them. I think that's a really nice thing, especially if you're working in a project with a team, you will probably get a good reputation as somebody who writes good code.
Last one we have, build things that excite you, from David Moore. Totally agree. If you are trying to improve your skills, sitting there doing a to-do app that doesn't make sense or building an app that has no relation to something that you're excited about, just change that app to be something you are excited about. I see it all the time in people who take my courses. They say, all right, Wes, I took your course, but I made this instead. And then they show me like whatever a little app it is that they built for somebody the other day is a preschool teacher, and they sent me what they're using, and they just took the slick slices from Gatsby and made it into, it's like still has the same styles, which I thought was awesome, but it just does something totally different for his specific use case. And that's the coolest thing to see, because you're going to go a lot further when you're excited and invested in the thing because it's solving a problem or excites you for what you're building.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Well, that is it for this advice. There are so much there. I think this might be one of the single most helpful episodes that we've done, because there's so many tasty treats in this episode. It's nothing but tasty treats. And we didn't have to bring them all. We got some help from the, I wanted to come up with some cute word for that, but I can't come up with anything. So
yeah. What are our syntax listeners called?
Yeah. We don't have
our taxi heads.
Taxi heads. What?
Curly brackets.
Curly brackets. No. Wes, you're good at naming things. What's up with this? What are the... What's?
Okay, hold on. Let's think about this for a second.
Yeah, let's think. They are...
people that listen to syntax.
I'm trying to think of something positive.
Yeah.
They're commits? They're committing to listen to the podcast?
Yeah, that's... Yeah. That's getting there. I think we need to throw this out to everybody listening.
It's better than taxi heads.
Yeah. Taxi heads. Not a good one at all. Send us on Twitter at SyntaxFM what you think syntax listeners should be called.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's it. Now it's part of the show where we talk about sick picks. And sick picks are the things that we think to be pretty sick. It can be just about anything. I have a sick pick for you today, Wes, that I don't know if you're aware of. And I think this is the type of tool that is going to be right up your alley. This thing is going to be right down Main Street for you.
All right.
This is called Raycast at raycast.com. And this thing is, you could think of it as like Alfred. It takes the place of Alfred. So it's something that you would use instead of Alfred. But let me tell you, I'm impressed. I'm impressed very much so that I'm considering just using this instead of Alfred. It connects to a lot of tools. So GitHub or Google or Asana or just Mac stuff in general, you can script commands really easily. Not that you can't in Alfred, but like this thing is really neat. There's a lot of really helpful tools in here for this. And one thing that I really liked about it, I don't know if you've ever tried to in Alfred, let's say you have a number value with a comma in it, which typically happens if you're copying and pasting it from places and you're trying to add it up. Let's say you have a bunch of like bank accounts and you're trying to add them all up, the values or whatever. If the commas are in there, Alfred doesn't know what to do. So you have to go through and manually remove all the commas.
Oh, that's a setting in Alfred. What? You just turn it off.
Well, whatever. Raycast does it by default. So Raycast better.
Yeah, it should be default.
Yeah. Either way, I found this thing to have a lot more tools and it's really neat. I like it. So I have
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I've just been running it for a little bit, and I think it's a neat little tool.
I'm excited about this because I've always found that scripting in Alfred to be a little bit tricky, and it stopped me from writing custom workflows. So it would be really cool. Like, can you write workflows in JavaScript with this thing?
I don't know. I have not done that yet. I haven't had the time.
It looks webby.
It's in beta right now. You can install it via Homebrew even. Let's see the scripting API.
That's how you know it's legit.
Yeah, that's how you know it's legit. It's, yeah, missing something, build it yourself. Secure by default, learn why. It's just neat. And I haven't had to configure it all so far. So yeah, it's nice.
John Lindquist from Egghead wrote a little tool for running short little scripts. And it's not like Alfred, but it's a little tool for running little scripts. And I thought, that thing looks pretty cool. There's some neat tools coming out. And especially like, is this Raycast thing looks like it's built in HTML, CSS. I bet that is going to work on Windows one day, and that will be amazing.
There's a lot of neat things in here. What's nice about it is you can interact inside of applications a little bit better. You know, like you want to do anything in Git, you can do that without installing an extension or those types of deals. You can give me my calendar.
Just installed it.
Yeah, give me my calendar at a glance.
It's got a things integration. Man, this looks amazing. I'm super excited. I've been an Alfred user for probably 10 years, and I've been a huge fan of it, but I've always felt like, or not always, but like, I feel like after 10 years, you're like, I kind of want a little bit more from this type of thing, you know?
I would say there has not been a ton of change from Alfred version 2 to Alfred version 4. It's just kind of been stagnant, so.
Yeah, I agree. Especially if this works on Windows, how sick would that be? Because then we can finally stop being like, oh, here's the like watered down version on Windows, you know, like when you're recommending an app and you have say, here's the kind of crappier version.
This is Albert. Albert is the one on Linux.
Ooh, Albert. Oh, and what's the one on Windows called?
That is a literal thing. It actually exists. No jokesies there. I don't know about Windows. Yeah, what would Windows be?
What's a
Alan?
Like an Alan or a...
No, yeah, it's got to be a... Yeah, like a butler kind of name. I don't know. Jeeves. Ask Jeeves.
No, it has to start with an A.
Ask Jeeves. That starts with an A.
There you go. That's the thing that's taken. Anyways, I got a sick pick for you today. And that is Amazon-based battery and screen replacements for your iPhone. Mm. So I have an iPhone XS Max. And I get splashed all the time from my kids because they're splashing in the bathtub or if I'm in the boat, things like that. And I know that it's supposed to be waterproof, but I think finally some water got into it and there was a little strip of the phone that just stopped working. And I tried doing the whole putting in desiccant beads and things like that, and it just didn't work. So I'm sitting here being like, all right, I'm a couple of months out from the new ones coming out. This thing is 3 years old. So I flipped back to my iPhone 7 Plus, but the battery was awful on it. Like I had to charge it 4 times a day. So for like the $25 Canadian, probably like 19 American, I got a brand new battery and it was really easy to open up. It came with a new waterproof gasket that you could install. It came with all the tools and it's like a brand new phone now that I have a brand new battery in it. And then I was thinking, okay, that's cool, but could I fix my 10XS Max because like the screen is gone on it? Like it did, the whole touch screen doesn't work, or not the whole, but part of it is really annoying. I couldn't type E. So I went on Amazon and like Apple wants like $429 Canadian to replace the screen. There's no way that's happening. So I went on Amazon, I found they have LCD versions of the display, which it's not as good as the OLED that comes on the phone, but it's pretty good.
Wouldn't that mess with the phone if you were using like an LCD flat and not an OLED? Like, because doesn't the phone do optimizations for it being OLED, or am I tripping on that?
I think so. But the iPhone has this thing called True Tone, which it adjusts it based on like what's going on in the room. You don't get that, but it was like, I would say it's 87% as good. So the colors are a little off, but Face ID still works, which is key if you want to do things like pay with your phone. And it came with a waterproof gasket. It was $100. And I was like, you know what? This is money well spent. $100 will get me through a couple more months until I can get the new phone. And then also like this phone is not getting thrown into a landfill. I can give it to a family or friend or something like that when it comes time. So they're very easy to install. A lot of people are like, you're an electronics wizard. I was like, literally anyone that can turn a screwdriver and plug things in could be able to do this. So I would encourage anyone.
What if you're clumsy?
I think you could do it. You just got to be, you have to be gentle because I didn't put enough heat. I didn't put enough heat on my screen because I was in a rush. And I cracked the old screen, which is fine because it was garbage anyway. But this, you just got to go slow with these types of things and watch a couple of YouTube videos.
Okay.
Beauty. All right. Shameless plugs. What do you got for me today, Scott?
Shameless plugs. I'm going to plug leveluptutorials.com/pro, where we have a new tutorial series every single month. And let me tell you, this is August 25th. So the course that's coming out in August, man, we are so far ahead of the recording on these. It's funny. I'm also ahead on recording the tutorial series. So the tutorial series that's coming out in August is going to be on web components. And it's basically going to be a web components 101. If you don't know a ton about them and you're curious, this is the perfect place to start from scratch. And this, of course, is going to be for beginners. It's going to be for people who hear the words web components and say, I know that kind of is something, I kind of get it, but I don't know what it is. So that's for you. If this is a course for you, the course that came out in July was from Colby Fayok on Next.js and e-commerce. So it's awesome, awesome course from Colby. He's the man. So check it out at leveluptutorials.com/pro. Sign up for the year and save 25%.
I'm going to shamelessly plug all my courses, westboss.com/courses. And if you use the coupon code Syntax, you can get $10 off learning JavaScript, CSS, React, you name it. You can learn it. BeginnerJavaScript.com is a big popular one of mine. So use coupon code Syntax. Currently on a summer sale. So grab them while those prices are sizzling.
Summer sale. Cool. Nice, nice, nice. Awesome. Well, that's it for advice for new devs. Another piece of advice. Keep listening to the Syntax. That's a good piece of advice right there. So thank you so much for listening. Wes, do you have anything else for today?
That's it. Thanks for tuning in.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.